to episode 40 of the Divided by Werewolf show. We are a week late. Apologies for that, but appreciate everybody hanging out and sticking around, figuring out when we'd be back, which, you know, isn't that big of a deal because you just wait until you get a message on the computer and there's a new show. So I don't know why I'm thanking anybody for anything.
Yeah.
Fuck all y'all.
No. We should,
before we get into it too much, we should thank everyone based on our last episode's popularity, though, because I don't know if you look at anything, but as far as interactions, private messages I got, I don't know about you.
Yeah.
And even looking at the Podbean site, it is far and away our most popular episode to date. So.
Yeah, no, I got a lot of messages like on Twitter and stuff, people saying, oh, hey, I hadn't heard of that movie. So, yeah, no, I'm glad folks are digging it. And they're I mean, this guy right here, like he's the reason I watch half the stuff I do. So, you know, I just was like, you know, and I was like, wow, I'd like to podcast again. I was like, well, shit, let me. I was like all the movies Mitch comes up with. So how about we talk about those? No. But yeah, absolutely. It's always fun to kind of, you know, find out that other people. I liked some of the comments we got, though, that people were like, I don't know any of these, you know, like,
yeah, those are my favorite ones. It's like, wow, you guys are into a very specific genre, aren't you? And I was like, well, I didn't think so, but if you've never heard of 90% of our list, I guess we are.
I think it's, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, like, tonight's show is a little different, and I think that some of the stuff that we talked about in the best of, kind of particularly the end of the year stuff, you know, we got highfalutin, but we also were somewhat lucky that, you know, Guillermo del Toro made a monster movie romance that was as highly regarded as it was, because that movie it's right in our wheelhouse. It just happened we could pass off as being fancy because of, you know, the awards that it was getting. Same thing with, you know, I mean, I don't think that you know, some of the other movies that did as well as they did this past year, like Get Out. I mean, Get Out is a fantastic movie and it deserves what it's getting, but it's also a horror movie, so we were going to go see it, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But, how about that, though, man? I think Shape of Water has the most nominations, I think, I read.
Yeah.
How fucking cool is that? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you go 2018, like it's like,
and it's
I'm excited.
Such a weird. I mean, I like Guillermo, like Pan's Labyrinth. Every time, I mean, I watch it, and I'm always amazed. But you know, you get the feeling that his work just isn't appreciated by the people that would make these decisions. And I don't know what it is about this movie that kind of finally, got him to where. It was like acceptable to give stuff,
right?
Because you kind of feel that way about the Academy, that they, and I don't know if like it just in recent years expanding things to covers, you know, kind of more popular stuff made a difference, but you know, for a long time it definitely felt like you could tell it doesn't matter how good a movie is if it's not the type of movie that typically wins an award, it's just not going to win. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And you know, over the past, you know, even just like 10 years or so, I think that's changed a fair amount. So
I agree. I think so.
So we've got a couple movies we're going to get into tonight. But more importantly, the dream has been realized.
It has.
And I would like to hear how it came about that Mitchell finally got his hands on the tiniest console known to man.
All right, so this is the whole thing. I plotted this for months. Mm-hmm. So I have a savings account that is specifically for the kids at Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I always take all the money out of that, usually late November. And so I got the brain to work, and I was like, well, wait a minute. It's been all of December. And a week or two in January. So at least, so I've got most of this covered just with that money.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, how I do, I don't spend a lot of money on a lot of things. And so it just sort of worked out to where I ended up, I was like, I had one in my cart on Best Buy .com a couple of weeks prior. I was like, I'll just put it on the card. And then in a couple of weeks, I was like, no, I always talk myself out of that because I'm like, I don't want to be further in debt than I have to be. You know, my credit cards are decent right now. Like, I'll be able to pay both of them off probably with my tax return. And all I'll have is, you know, my regular bills and my car payment again. But anyway, it turned out that I had a little extra money, and I think I paid $16 out of pocket out of my checking account.
For
the Switch. So everything else was savings or a gift card I got at Christmas. I went towards it, you know, shit like that.
Uh-huh.
And so, but since then, I just been balling, man. I'm just like, fuck yeah, I want that game. I want this game. I want that game. Like, that fucking machine makes you disregard money.
Yeah, it does, and it makes you want to play everything on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I don't know what it is about. I know for me what it is, but I mean, I've always been someone who, as much as I enjoy playing games, like sitting, like playing a game while my wife and I watch TV has been the majority of it. But I never. So I knew that was perfect for me, but to hear other people that are just like, yeah, this is all I want to play it on, I'm just – it blows my mind.
It's awesome, man. Like, just that whole thing. So here's why it's awesome for me. Okay, so you know how my house is, right? Jacob is on the kids' Xbox a lot. When Katie asks for a turn, she gets greeted with that world-ending sigh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. I guess.
Right.
Like, well, you've only been sitting there for 4.5 hours, son. She can't play one fucking round Overwatch. Are you serious?
Right. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you pay for this?
Right. Exactly. And so, and I'm like, you know what, man? I'm a gamer. I understand. And so I'm lenient to an extent. But I'll be goddamned if I'm going to have 3 Xboxes and 3 live accounts just so we can all fucking play games when we want to.
Right.
That's a little extreme.
Yeah.
So. What's nice about the Switch is I can – well, two things. So first of all, I can let Katie play on my Xbox while Jacob's on theirs, and I can still be playing something, which I've always had that option. But it's like my bedroom is where all the old consoles are. Mm-hmm. I just recently the PS3 moved to the bedroom out of the living room. It's officially retired from the living room console. But you know, it's just nice. I could sit in the room with them. The other thing that's nice about it is that Katie loves it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she loves Mario Kart. Like, she's all about Mario Kart. We play a fuck ton of Mario Kart in my house right now. And so that's the thing. Like, I like playing with the kids. Jacob is so competitive, and so he only wants to do Overwatch, and he wants to do competitive and all that shit. And I'm like, I play Drunk Watch once a week, and that's the extent of my Overwatch.
Right.
So I don't necessarily enjoy playing comp mode with him.
Sure.
When that rolls back. But I can play Mario Kart with anybody.
Right.
Fuck, it's Mario Kart, you know? So that's been really fun. But I got Mario Odyssey, Mario Kart, Breath of the Wild, and, I bought Blaster Master on the e-store, whatever the fuck they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But then last weekend, I went shopping. Me and Holly, because that's the other thing. Holly's really into it. She's enjoying playing Mario Kart. We play a lot of that. She bought that 1-2 Switch game for her Switch.
Oh, really?
That's been fucking stupid fun. Man, I will tell you this. I am not to be fucked with on the runway.
You are too sexy for your shirt. I've often said that.
I am too sexy for that console because nobody comes close to matching me on the runway minigame.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we went out and I saw the Axiom Verge physical copy because you know me on physical copies.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, it was $40. It was the tiny little regular Switch case, you know, the ones you usually get.
Yeah.
I get to the counter and the lady starts pulling out all this shit, this big box, a poster, a bonus soundtrack. Yeah, a fucking DVD with a making of documentary. And I was like, what? I'm getting all that?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, this is what it comes with this. And I'm like, fuck yeah, it does. And then she rings it up and it's 29 instead of 30. And I'm like, oh shit.
Wow.
What's up? So I've been playing the fuck out of Axiom Verge.
I started it and I just couldn't get into it.
I remember you saying that and I worried about it, but I was like,
well, we're different. I mean, like I need, if it's not photorealistic, I'm like, yeah, not so much.
I understand. So like, yeah, I tend to still enjoy the retro style stuff, but I also, the more importantly, I goddamn love me a Metroidvania game.
Yeah, and I like Metroid Prime, like and that's what's funny is I love Metroid Prime games, but like the Metroid games I'm not as into, and I don't know, I mean, it's the same thing. I don't know why it would make a difference, but
it just, it so reminds me of Symphony of the Night. And that game, I worship at the altar of that game forever. You know, Symphony of the Night is the only thing I knew about it was I had laid out of work. I went to the mall and I was like, oh, a new Castlevania on PlayStation. Wow, look at that. And so I bought it and then I proceeded to spend the next 2 years playing it. So this game is like right up that alley. And then like I play it on my TV until it's time to watch TV or the hockey game comes on or Katie wants to play Xbox. And I'm like, all right, cool. Let me just get it out of the dock there and put Joy-Cons. Yeah.
You know what's funny is that Breath of the Wild is the only game I've played hooked up to the TV, and only because I did a fuck ton of shrines while working out. Everything else I play, like I have a laptop, like a lap pad. You know those like little fucking pillow things that you put on your lap so you can like work or whatnot. And then I reverse it because it inclines away from me because the kickstand on the Switch is so finicky.
Yeah.
And then I undock it and I put the monitor part there and I put it on my lap and I recline on the couch and I get my Pro Controller and man, I'm fucking good to go.
Nice.
And that is how I played pretty much everything.
I'm almost 50-50. I play both ways, so I kind of enjoy it on my TV, but I also enjoy playing a handheld, which I've talked myself into buying handhelds, PSP, 2DS, whatever the fuck it was, a DS. Yeah. I bought a DS, bought a PSP. And I was like, I'm going to play this one. I'm going to play it this time because I want to play this game. And I play them for a month and never touch them again.
I think there's a difference. I mean, I don't know what the difference is, but I think it is the fact that, you know, for all the talk of like the Vita and the PSP, then being like, it's like a third, you know, a console game. I don't know. There's just something about they might have looked good, but they still were making shortcuts, allowances, whatever you want to call it, for the fact that it was a portable game.
Right.
You know, maybe the load times were horrible. Maybe the maps were small. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Or the battery.
Also control, you know, the control options were finicky, but I will say this, I think part of it for me is, and it's a mental thing and it's absolutely a mental thing, is I have a PS3, I have a PS4, I have whatever on the shelf over there. Mm-hmm. And these games cost the same amount.
Right.
And so I'm like, am I going to buy SOCOM on the PSP when I could just get SOCOM for the PS3 and it's so much better?
Yes.
And so with this, it's both.
Right, exactly.
It's the TV game and it's also the handheld game. You only buy it once and it's the same game.
Right.
And I think that's, for me, is the Switch.
No, that's flipped. That's an excellent point. You know, like when you were, you know, because as much as, you know, like no Mario game that ever came out on a DS was as good as maybe a Mario game that you'd get on whatever the current Nintendo home console was.
Right.
But yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. Yeah, you know, for me, it's one of those things where I always look at Mario Kart, and Mario Kart's one of those games where I always think I'm going to like it more than I am. And then so I kind of stopped getting it a while ago simply because I was like you, I would buy it and I'd be like, nah, this is the time I'm going to play Mario Kart. And then I wouldn't. It's not that they're not good games. It's just that I'm bad at them. I don't like playing other people at them. They kind of have limited use. Like, I could see if you had like people over and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Playing Mario Kart in that situation. Yeah, absolutely. You know, my right. kids like, you know, they have it for the Wii U. They like it. They play it. But for me, it's like, nah, you know,
it's one of those things that, like you said, the concept has always been more appealing than the actual game. But, I got a Wii, like I just got a Wii, like probably last summer.
Okay.
And so I have new Super Mario Brothers. I have Mario Galaxy, which I don't fucking like. And I've got Zelda, I've got Smash Brothers, but I bought Mario Kart because I thought the kids would like it. And it turned out that Katie played a shit ton of Mario Kart on the Wii, and I played with her. And so I was like, well, this is a no-brainer for the Switch because I'm interested in it. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Supposedly, from what I've read, it's the best Mario Kart so far.
Right.
And we're loving it, man. We're having a great time playing it. So.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is I've bought more independent games for my Switch than – I mean, it's a close tie with the PS4 because the reason that – you know, part of the reason that I bought a PS4 was because of how many like indies were going to be coming to it. But man, I bought a fucking ton on the Switch. I just bought Battle Chef Brigade for my trip, and I like it. I don't like it as much as other people seem to dig it because it's a match three game, but it's not like a match three game like I kind of expected. Mm-hmm. So I don't it's more like match three games to me are it's more like a timed, almost like a puzzler, like a kind of Tetris / Dr. Mario. And I was thinking more like a puzzle quest type of thing.
Right. Right.
So, but it's good. It's just not as good as I kind of thought it would be because it's not the game I thought it would be.
Sure.
But Breath of the Wild, fucking loved it. You know, Super Mario Odyssey, loved it. Like, I bought a turn-based strategy game. Like, I bought a Mario turn-based strategy game.
Yeah, Rabbids. I still want to play that, too. Yeah, I'm going to be playing that one.
I mean, I didn't go do, like, all the challenge missions and all that stuff, but you don't have to in that game. You can do right. what you want. And Golf Story was great. I love
it. I'm going to play that. Just because of you, I'm actually going to play that.
I love that game. And then when I was reading this stuff, like when I saw, like, here's the thing. Any reservations that I had about the Switch would have evaporated as soon as I heard The World Ends With You was getting a remake.
Yep.
Because that is one of my all-time favorite games, one of my absolute favorite games on the DS.
That was a big push for me to go ahead and buy the fucking thing.
I mean, holy shit. And then they're going to do a Mario Tennis game, but it's – or a Mario Golf – Mario Tennis. But it's like a story mode.
Tennis,
Fucking absolutely. Like, I mean, they – I mean, if I bought one because I heard – because they put Metroid Prime 4 on a fucking – PowerPoint presentation and called it a day, and I was like, yep, here's my money, you know, then I mean, but The World Ends With You, I mean, it's just a great fucking game. And all absolutely. These Wii U games, like the Donkey Kong Country or whatever it's called, and
looking forward
you know,
to that.
There's a bunch of other things that I didn't give a shit about when it was on, and you know, and here's the thing, like I'm not a big platformer game, but I like, you know, I think the Donkey Kong games are funny, you know, they look cute and whatnot. Sure. I'm more willing to try them on this platform because I like the console so much. Mm-hmm. Am I going to buy it? Probably not. I'll definitely rent it, but I would not have played it at all.
Right.
When it was on the Wii U, even if the Wii U had been down in the basement, the Wii U is up where my kids hang out. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have gotten it if it was down here. Because it just wasn't the type, you know, to if I'm like, all right, if I'm going to go sit down for an hour, but if I'm going to dick around for a few hours, then yeah. There's just for me, I don't know. There's a difference. And I don't care like if they don't, you know, like I'm not expecting to see, you know, an Assassin's Creed game on it. You know, I don't give a shit about anything like that.
No, me neither.
And it, you know, I'm sure that there'll be plenty for me to do on it with what they've already announced, or you know, just yep. the kind of stuff that I think will naturally kind of gravitate towards it. I mean, I bought Stardew Valley on it just because I heard everybody talking about how great it is to farm, and it is a good game. Yeah. It's fun. Have I played it as much as I think as other people have, like on the PC? Nope. But it's there, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. If I want to play it, it's there. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it's great. I always like whenever I see somebody get like a new console like that, it's always like you're always a little jealous because like, oh, you haven't played all these games. Like, you get to play them all. I've already played them. You get to play them for the first time.
Right. Well, and then like how slow I am. It's like I'm still.
Oh, Jesus. Old. Yeah.
I'm still slogging through Nier Automata, and I fucking love the game. I love it. It's so good. But it's just like I'm another thing is I never do this, but I've done it. I've started like so many things here lately.
See, I can't do that. Like I have to really segment things because I'll run the risk of not ever finishing stuff. And for me, like if I stop playing a game with a story, most likely I am never coming back to it. It just is the way that it is.
And right.
I've stopped trying to convince myself that, you know, it's going to be any different.
Right.
I don't know why, but it just is what it is.
Yep.
So like right now I have Monster Hunter World. I rented it. It came. I got, you know, people on this stream last night were like, you and Mitch should do Monster Hunter again. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. But I got like 900 fucking missions and Origins I need to do.
Right.
Like, I got hats to get in PUBG, like, you know.
Exactly. Like, I want to play it. I really do because I enjoyed the beta. And, like, I'm watching everybody else play it because, you know, I'm addicted to YouTube and stuff. And so everything I've seen looks awesome. But at the same time, I don't want to play it by myself.
Me neither.
It just doesn't look like the kind of thing that I'm going to enjoy by myself. But and so I was really waiting for you to be like, hey – we should play this. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go buy it.
I figured in the summer, you know, like when there's kind of a lull in the summer, let's go fucking beat up some dinosaurs. Because, you know,
because I know good and goddamn well we're going to play Far Cry.
Goddamn right.
And so I'm like, do I want to get Monster Hunter now when I have 10 plus games I've not even fucking touched yet? I have 5 or 6 things I'm currently playing.
Yeah.
And something that I'm mildly interested in, it's sort of. It's on my radar, but it's not the time. Now is not the time.
No. Those dinosaurs, they can be made into pants in the dead, in the dead days of August when you're like,
exactly. It's
hot. I need some shorts made out of a lizard's asshole. All right. Well, that's a good transition point. That's king of the
century. Yeah,
that's me right there. We don't have as many movies to talk about. Mitch has been watching a ton of shit, but I'm fucking old and I got responsibilities. So I haven't watched as much, but we have two things. The first one I think we'll get into is some Mike Flanagan. So he is horror writer, director. You would know his work. He did Oculus, which is a fantastic horror movie. He did Hush, which is a great kind of twist on the home invasion genre. And then he did Gerald's Game, which we were both big fans of, the Netflix exclusive adaptation of the Stephen King story. And that was on Mitch's list of his favorite movies of the year. And so he came out with another Netflix exclusive movie called Before I Wake, and it has Kate Bosworth and Thomas Jane, who is despite a questionable haircut,
the Bon Jovi hair.
I was like, dude, what are you doing? This man's gorgeous. Why are you fucking putting that mop on his head?
Right.
Despite a questionable haircut, still put in a great performance. I liked the movie, although as Mike Flanagan movies go, it's probably my least favorite.
Same. Yep.
It's kind of I don't know what you would call it. it's not a ghost story. It's about this couple who had lost a child, and they take in a foster child, and weird things start happening kind of every time this kid goes to sleep. And I liked kind of what they set up with it when it first started, like trying to figure out, like it's short, it's like an hour and 36, and they cut to the chase pretty quick. Like they don't do this whole, like, you know, are we dreaming? Is this real? Isn't it real? And that part I did like, is the fact that,
yeah,
you know, a lot of times in something like this, you know, you'd have one spouse who's saying how I saw this, it was real. And the other spouse is like, you're stressed and crazy. And that wasn't the case at all here. Like, it was obvious that both of the, you know, the parents were kind of seeing the same thing. And then it kind of turns into the mom there, because one of the things they're seeing is a vision of their dead kid, and not a vision, like, he's real.
Like, right.
They can hug him, and, you know, and he looks just like he did when he died. And so the mom starts doing some kind of questionable stuff to get the kid. And the boy, I forget it. What's his name? Like Lucas or something like that? What's in the movie?
Cody.
So Cody kind of knows that if I go to sleep, some bad stuff might happen. So he's kind of keeping himself awake. Then the mom there, who's – I'm terrible with the name, so we're not
Jesse.
Jesse, yeah. So she starts saying, you know, kind of having him go to sleep, saying, well, he's a child, he needs to sleep, but also because when this kid goes to sleep, her dead son comes back.
Right.
And I liked that aspect of it, this idea that even though, you know, she felt the need to kind of protect this kid, and obviously otherwise she wouldn't have taken him in, you know, the loss that she felt was overpowering that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was essentially using him,
yeah,
to eke out, you know, what she looked at as more time with her son.
Right.
And then Thomas Jane is kind of, you know, on the other side going, well, look, we've got this kid, we need to take care of him. And I liked his performance. I thought
I did too.
I think everybody did a great job. The performances were good, especially the kids. Sometimes, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's a potential there of it not of them kind of going.
Yeah, this kid was good. I can't remember the actor's name, but I liked him a lot.
But the I don't know, I think there is definitely an audience for good kind of creepy horror movies that don't necessarily have to be hard R's and
right.
disgusting and all that stuff.
Right.
And it's just that, I don't know, this one, I don't know what it was missing, but it just didn't quite hit the mark.
For me. We're in agreement. Even as a PG-13 horror, it still was sort of safer. I actually, to me, it felt more like sort of a dark fairy tale kind of thing.
Yeah,
like a twisted fairy tale thing with the kid dreaming and I gotta tell you, God bless this poor innocent child, because the shit I dreamed about,
mm-hmm.
when I was his age, it wasn't motherfucking butterflies they'd have been dealing with in the living room. Like, it would have been some crazy shit.
Yeah, no shit, you know? Right?
But you know, I liked it. I like you. I think it's probably my least favorite Flanagan movie. And it's funny. This movie is probably, I think it was like 3-4 years old at this point.
Oh, really?
It was supposed to get a theatrical release, and then it got shelved.
Mm.
And I think Netflix, you know, because they're obviously sort of really pushing Flanagan, and so they got the rights to it and put it out. But it's, from what I understand, it was filmed like in like 13 or 14 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it was supposed to be like after Oculus or before. I don't know. But because Oculus for me was way better than it had any right to be. Like, I expected to not give a shit about it. And I was just like, wow, that was fucking
Oculus
decent.
Is one of those movies when you're scrolling through like the horror selection on whatever streaming platform you watch movies on.
Right.
And then you're like, all right, you know. And then you're like, holy shit.
Right, right. You're like, I'm tired of looking at this fucking poster or whatever. Let me just press the goddamn button already.
Right. Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. Yeah.
And you expect it to be shit. It looks like you go down that, not the main end cap with the new stuff at Walmart, but that one aisle that has like the same fucking movie over and over, like these straight DVD horror movies. That's what it looked like. And it probably would have been, I think, had it not been for Flanagan's talent. And so I think that speaks a lot to his ability. But this one, like, the story's okay with the whole, the Canker Man and all that. Like, it was an interesting story. I just think that they were really safe with where they went with it.
Yeah.
Because there were dark themes, you know. You have child drowns in the bathtub. Like you said, the mother's taking advantage of this poor kid. All he's trying to do is not sleep. So you have like that whole Nightmare on Elm Street thing going on where he's scared to death. If he sleeps, somebody's going to die. And everybody's good. It's just like the movie almost was too safe.
Right, because when it first started and she's kind of remembering how her child dies, and then, you know, you're kind of like, okay, you know, and then it just kind of – that was really one of the most one of the most disturbing parts, you know? And then, like you said, it just kind of –
I don't mean to make light of the situation because it was a terrible situation, but I don't know if you thought of this at all, but I just was wondering, I was like, did their kid have seizures or what the fuck happened in the tub, man? Like, just get up.
Like, I don't know. I guess maybe he just kind of panicked and just like,
I guess
he freaked out and then, you know, I don't know, but yeah.
When you see these stories of these kids that have these horrible, tragic drowning things in the bathtub, they're a little younger than their kid was. I was like, bro, just get up.
Like, yeah, right. Like, exactly. Sit up. Just, you know.
Yeah.
It's cool.
You're good. I mean, it's – but anyway, you know, again, like you said, probably my least favorite Flanagan movie, but like that's in and of itself says something because they're all good.
Right.
So it's hard to hate on it. It's worth watching, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that I don't know. I guess I look at it as if somebody wasn't a Mike Flanagan fan, it's one thing, but I don't know. Like, I look at it sometimes when, like, you know, you want him to be able to keep making movies. So, you know, if that means that occasionally you for 90 minutes, you watch something and you go, yeah, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't something where I felt like I didn't go, well, I need to keep watching it because Mike Flanagan made it or anything like that. I mean, I was, you know, kind of into it while I was watching it. It's just when it was done, I was like, yeah, all right. You know?
Yep. Yeah. I won't watch it again. I mean,
no. You know, and you know, it kind of suffers from that whole 10-minute wrap up exposition thing.
That's another thing I wanted. We're not going to spoil it, but what a fucking downer of an ending.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was just like, Jesus, for as safely as we tread, for as long as we did, you would have thought it would have wrapped up a little like lighter than it did.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But you know, shit happens.
Yeah.
that's the theme. That's the Mike Flanagan lesson. Don't get attached.
That's it. No.
And so in contrast to that, which is the Mexican movie we're going to talk about, which is essentially you being dropped into a conversation and you have to kind of put together all the parts while people are still talking. Fantastic movie. Wish I had been able to see it before we did our end of show, but Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And I always have to check. I have to make sure that Ebbing, Missouri, that I get that wrong, because the first time I talked to my wife about it, I was like, oh yeah, I watched that Three Billboards Outside Billings, Montana. I was like, yeah, I think that's right. And I was like, okay, it's Three Billboards Outside, you know, Pierre, South Dakota. Wait, no. I'm like, you're just picking random Midwestern states in the only city you know of them. Like, you might want to learn the name of this fucking movie before you go. What I didn't know when I watched it is that Martin McDonagh did it. And I don't know if you're a fan of his work. But he did two movies prior to this, one called In Bruges,
Yeah, okay.
You haven't seen it?
No.
It's fantastic. It is absolutely
I've seen
fantastic.
The title. I've seen the title, never watched it.
It is absolutely fantastic. One of the best. Before I saw The Lobster, I would have said it was the best movie, you know, outside of Daredevil, that Colin Farrell has ever made.
okay.
But, I mean, The Lobster is fucking great. So, but that's great. And then he also did this movie called Seven Psychopaths, which also had
Samuel Oh, I've Fallen. Seen that. Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah,
really, really good movie. So he did both of them, but Three Billboards, Frances McDormand, Sam Rockwell, fantastic Woody Harrelson performance.
Yes.
Just great, great Woody Harrelson performance. Those three people, though, I mean, Sam Rockwell was great. I don't know if he won a Golden Globe for it, and he was nominated. He was amazing. Frances McDormand was amazing. Just a fantastic movie. And it's about this woman whose daughter was murdered, and she, unhappy with the the police response and their investigation, rents out three billboards outside the town that say, you know, one of them says, why Sheriff Willoughby, you know, why no arrests? And then says, like, you know, my daughter was raped. I forget what they all say, but basically raped while dying.
Raped while dying, still no arrests. Why Sheriff Willoughby, I think, is what it said.
Right. And they're not, they're not defamatory, because she's just asking a question. And so it kind of drops you in right at the beginning of her deciding to rent these billboards. And her position is that – and Sam Rockwell plays this – I think we can call him stupid.
Yeah.
Deputy, like a racist deputy who had some issues roughing up black people. And Woody Harrelson plays Sheriff Willoughby, who is sympathetic to the fact that there haven't been any arrests. But, you know, kind of his point is, like, sometimes there are crimes that you just really can't get a break on because there's no DNA there. Or if there is DNA, it doesn't match anybody on file. It doesn't match anybody who committed a crime, you know, nobody in the system, that type of thing. Mm. And so it's a movie about what happens to this town when she puts these billboards up, and just the kind of the anger and the frustration that she feels. And we, as the movie goes on, we kind of get a better understanding as to why, outside of just having lost a loved one to a horrible crime, but there's kind of more to it as to why she feels as angry and frustrated as she does.
Mm-hmm.
And it is funny, but not a comedy. It is hilarious at times.
Right. Yeah.
But not a comedy. Sam Rockwell's performance, the way his character changes and how you feel about his character, how that changes as the movie goes on. And when you consider, like, my favorite Sam Rockwell performance is in The Way, Way Back. I don't know if you've seen that one. That's where he plays the guy who helps run the water park.
I haven't.
80s and the kid goes. It's a fantastic movie. But just kind of the performance in that movie compared to this movie, it's just really awesome to kind of see his ability to work.
I guess. He's amazing. He's incredible, and he does not get the recognition that he should get, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like, for me, my favorite's Moon, because that movie just fucking blew me away. Like, I love that movie. That's why I know who he is because of that movie. But I'm even guilty of it. He's not a person who I've actively seeked out everything he's done. Now, I probably will be now.
Yeah.
Just based on, you know, the few things I've seen him in, I'm like, yeah, you know, but this one, he played, it's such a despicable role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that it's such a thing. And even, there's even controversy about it, how they sort of – he sort of gets redemption almost a little bit, or starts working towards it. But this is the character who I envision is probably 90% of the police force in every town I've ever lived in.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, I grew up in a town in Alabama that, I shit you not, the biggest bank in town was robbed in broad daylight, and the robbers escaped via bicycle. And to this day, not a single arrest has been made. So to see him play this character, I was just like, Jesus Christ, that is Dixon. Yeah, Dixon. That is every police officer at every, like, in every town I've ever lived in. That's the entire police force.
Right. Well, I think there's some, I agree. I agree that there's some redemption there, and you can, and I think that that's definitely worth criticizing. I think the other aspect of it that I thought of that is kind of worth, in the same vein, is we're supposed to hate Dixon because he's a racist,
right?
But at the same time, like, Frances McDormand's character, she's not a nice person.
Oh no, not at all.
And she has been somewhat warped and twisted by her grief, but she wasn't all that great before that. And clearly, based on some of the stuff that she went through prior to that, you can somewhat understand. But at the same time, you know, she is using the fact that these cops are racist and are essentially harassing the brown members of the community. She's essentially just kind of using that for her own stuff. She's not actively taking advantage of it, but she's benefiting from it. You know, at one point, the cops kind of give the guy who rented her the billboards a hard time, and he basically is like, yeah, you know, for lack of a, without getting into it, there's like an accounting error. So turns out you don't actually have all the money. And then some Mexican guy shows up and pays for it. And so, you know, her whole, she kind of gives a speech or an interview saying, well, you know, the reason I did this is because, you know, they haven't made any arrests because they're too busy roughing up, you know, black people. So she's kind of using the racial, you know, disparity in the town as almost like a cover for what she's trying to get. Like, it's her, in a way, what she is she's upset and guilty and frustrated as anybody would be if their child or loved one was killed in a violent crime. You know, all those feelings of, you know, is there something that I could have done? The feeling of helplessness, the feeling that, you know, the cops just aren't doing their job. I mean, everybody has felt that. And she turns it into action, but she uses the kind of the racial divides already present in the city as like a cover. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, she's not an ally. She ain't woke. You know what I mean? She just found people that would kind of help her because of what they've already experienced, not because she feels like she needs to help them. And so I agree that, you know, I think you could say that he doesn't deserve, you know, maybe to be redeemed the way that he is. But at the same time, you go, well, people can change. Like, I think we do have to allow for the idea that people can change. Mm-hmm. But she's just as bad in my mind.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. I agree.
You know, she's not actively racist in beating people up. Yeah. But like, do you think she was justified in putting up the billboards?
See, I don't know, because I can't, probably like I wouldn't have, but at the same time, I can't imagine how she felt. Like, I can't imagine that grief. I got, you know, Jesus, hope I never can relate to her situation. But at the same time, I'm thinking like, okay, well, part of it like you said, it's guilt, and it's based on the flashback sequence that you get that is on fucking par with the mother and the live show we caught.
Monster.
From the monster and the live show we caught on Drunk Watch. And I'm just like, I can't fathom like being that way towards a kid. And kids are, you know, they make you go crazy. But I just think that, man, like she's dealing with, she has substance abuse issues, obviously. Her husband is dating a 20-year-old, which was hilarious.
She was great. And that guy, I was trying to figure out what he was in, but I didn't recognize him being clean shaven. He was Saul in Deadwood.
Oh yeah. Also, I knew that, but what I know him from is he was the poor guy in the gas station at the start of Dusk Till Dawn. Who's like, I never said help us.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So that's
yeah, that's of, right. Shit, I forgot all about that.
He's forever that guy for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I understand her frustration and me being who I am, I'm like the lady from Dusk Till Dawn. I wouldn't say shit if I had a mouth full of it. I don't know, man. I guess she sort of was frustrated and, like you said, guilty. And she's like, well, they're not doing shit. I'm fucking tired of it. Or I need some kind of closure. I need something to make me feel better, because I'm sure she feels.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It was an extreme, I think, sort of response versus, hey, just go up to the station. Did you do that? Did you go talk to anybody? I don't know, because like you said, we're thrown in however many months or whatever it is into it.
7 months. Yeah, 7 months.
7 months. And so it's like, well, we don't know what she's done for 7 months.
Right. And here's the thing. Like, I go, okay, was Woody Harrelson, like, his explanations, did they sound reasonable? Because they were coming from somebody that kind of sounded like a reasonable guy.
Yeah.
Or were they actually reasonable? Like, if he's saying, look, nobody saw it. We got DNA there. They don't match anybody in this. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think sometimes, you know, people go, oh, well, DNA, like it's some kind of magic bullet, right? Like, but if it's not in the system, or you don't have somebody in custody or a suspect that you can get a sample from, it doesn't matter, because I mean, what are you going to match it to? There's no, you know.
So that's the thing. Like, I think that I don't know who's to say, man. It's like he said, it's like, you know, we didn't get a break, this and that. So I guess she sort of felt like, well, they're just giving up. And based on the, you know, the people who are employed at that particular police department, they're not go-getters. And so it's like, and Woody Harrelson, God bless his heart, he's doing I felt like he was doing the best he could given his personal stuff going on.
Yeah.
And then who he had to work with. It's not like he could just snap his fingers and, you know, he doesn't have fucking Serpico or, you know, whoever, you know what I mean? Like, he's got Dixon. So
And the other people were just as you know, kind of just as bad. No, you're right. You're right. And that's the thing that I liked about it. The movie is that it wasn't cut and dry. I mean, you sympathized with her, but then, you know, as the movie goes on, you're kind of like, well, you're not all that great of a person. Like, you know, the date that she went on with Peter Dinklage, like, you feel terrible for him.
Yep.
You know, that line that I held your ladder, like, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was fantastic. It's such a small role. And I don't mean that. Like, sorry, that was a horrible, that was a bad pun. There's no small roles, only small actors. So I was just making it worse. I mean, he didn't have like this huge, you know, kind of overarching story, but, you know, what he did add to it was just this fantastic view into kind of who she was as a person at that point. Not, you know, and that may not have been who she always was, but that's who she was then.
Right.
I thought it was great. I mean, it was not, it's a movie that doesn't have, like, it's not wrapped up well. You don't leave it going, well, you know, I feel like it's like you walk in on a conversation and you leave before it ends.
Yeah. Well, I will say though, I liked the way it ended. Like, not like, obviously you don't get the closure. But I liked how you sort of thought maybe you were or whatever. And then the movie's like, we're not done with you yet, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very, very good. I think that, I can understand after because I didn't know jack shit about it.
Right.
You know, I remember reading on the AV Club talking about some movie, Three Billboards, and I was like, whatever. Like, I knew nothing about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just kind of started blowing up, you know, all the awards talk. And I was like, what the fuck is this movie? And then you had said that you watched it and it was great. And I was like, well, shit, then I need to fucking watch it. And, yeah, I mean, it did not disappoint, you know, no doubt about it.
For me, it was, I didn't even read a synopsis. I heard all the talk about it and then I looked at the cast and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to watch it. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't know jack shit about what it was about. I mean, obviously it's about Three Billboards and I knew that, but right. what they were going to say and what they were, you know, pertaining to, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So I was just, I was blown away.
Yeah. I did love the scene at the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
It just dentist like when scene. The, and,
oh, there's the so many scenes.
And the scene with the priest.
Yep.
Just like the Bloods and the Crips.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, the one thing that I didn't get a good feel for, and it could just be, this is just how small towns are, is the fact that the town was so much on the side of the police force. And I don't know if it's just they thought, well, yeah. Sheriff Willoughby, he's like a nice guy. Because there's something we find out about Sheriff Willoughby later in the movie that makes you feel somewhat sympathetic towards him. But the way they present it is that not everybody knew what was going on.
Right.
It was a little like, well, why is the town so much kind of on their side?
Okay, but and so my sort of take on that was, look at who was mostly on his side, right? A dentist,
right.
You know, the kind priest, of, like, you know,
the old boy network,
right? But then you look at a Mexican was paying for them for her, the black guy put the billboard up. Was on her side. The black lady that she worked with at the trinket store or whatever was on her side. And so I feel like that was intentional.
You know, you're right. You're right. And here's the thing that I think it's a great, she is with on the side of the people that she is simply because they're on her side because they're part of a community that traditionally doesn't get justice.
Like right. One of their own.
Yeah.
Right.
Are, you know, victims of violence, whether it be, at the hands of the police or just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that, again, she's kind of benefiting from an association that, she hasn't really earned. I mean, and she's earned it. And I hate to say that because anybody who is either directly or tangentially affected by like a violent crime. I mean, you don't have to earn justice, right? You should just get it. But you kind of want, like, if this hadn't happened to her, and aside from, like, you know, she did say that her husband was an ex-cop, so she probably she probably knew, like, Dixon and all those guys, she probably knew how they were married to who she was, because she spot that guy from a mile away.
Right. And I feel like it sort of insinuated or sort of, you know, wanted you to sort of get the idea that even though she had been, domestically abused and all that, they were on his side. And so they automatically sort of already didn't care for her. you know, they sort of tolerated her, you know. But like, you know, when, and she still, like, she had moments where she wasn't this horrific person. Like, when she, you know, she was like, we're going to get you an ambulance to Woody Harrelson and this and that. And like, he's like, let her go. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like everybody sort of, I don't know, like it, like everything about this movie was about that one particular thing, but there's so much other shit that is influencing it from so many different directions.
Right. And but, you know, I guess my point is that, you know, again, like, is she, like, she's a part of this family who's supporting her because they oftentimes don't find justice, but she wouldn't have.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Would she have cared about the fact that they can't beyond this experience? If it had never happened, if her daughter got home safe and sound, she probably would be like, oh, my ex-husband's an asshole, and, you know, that cop, he's an asshole. I can tell just by looking at him.
Right.
But would she have given a shit about the brown folks getting roughed up by the police?
Right.
Probably not.
You're absolutely correct.
And so it's this, you know, it was just this really just interesting view of kind of, I don't know. It just, I just thought it was in this time, like, when it's so easy to kind of harness the power of other people without really trying to put yourself into their situation and realize, like, are we doing it? Like, are we together for the right reason? Or, like, once I get what I need, I don't give a fuck about you anymore. You
keep
on keeping on. Like, oh, man, it just.
Yeah.
And I mean, just what a great movie to just kind of, like you said, to have all of these things. And it not, I mean, and they just happen. Like, it's just so, like, it just felt so organic. It wasn't like an exposition or anything. It was just little comments here and there as part of a little conversation or, just fantastic.
Yep.
So, we need to go back in time. Although, I'm not taking anything off my list, so we'll just have to.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, fuck it. Like we said, it's when we watched it, not when it came out. So this is a strong contender for best of 2018 already.
That's right. Yeah. 1 month in, because it's February 1st, 1 month in. It's the only so my next Black Panther is the next one.
Yeah.
That shit's going to be lit. I hope I wish I could watch it while listening to the soundtrack at the same time.
Yeah.
But you know, unfortunately, then I'll miss all the great dialogue.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I hope it's not just another Marvel movie for me.
All right. Well, this is why for me, I'm like, good either way.
Yeah.
If it's just another Marvel movie, I'm like, score. If it's better than that, I can't lose.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I did like that Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer. I will say.
I did too. Yep.
I like that, you know, that kind of running across the knife. I was like,
I love tight. Ant-Man. Ant-Man is not just another Marvel movie. Ant-Man was fucking fantastic.
I loved Ant-Man.
I did too.
Just like I love Doctor Strange, but I loved Ant-Man. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I know that a lot of people weren't big on it, but
yeah. That's probably why I like it so much.
Probably. All right. So that's episode 40. So again, if you're looking at, I feel like we should, like, I need to do a better job of like putting links to things and like trying to figure out a way to like get people to watch it that we get money. But
yeah, right.
I mean, it's not like Podbean's expensive. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's like nothing. But I always see like on quarter three when he like does a post about a movie and he's like, you watch on Amazon Prime, we get money. And I'm like, oh shit, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, right.
And I always forget. But it's hard because a lot of the times we see stuff that's already in that's in the theater, and it's not like I can, I mean, there's no way to anyway. We're not looking to make a buck. We're just looking to have a good time and share it with all y'all. So thank you, everybody, for hanging out tonight. We appreciate it, as always. We'll be back in the next couple weeks, and we'll see what we can rustle up for you. 2 weeks from now, we won't have seen Black Panther yet, but I'm sure we can come up.
I didn't know if you – I don't know if you want to do – are we going to get back on schedule next week? Are we going to – go 2 weeks from here? I don't know how you wanted to do it.
Probably 2 weeks from here. Just because I don't know. I mean, we can decide, but, in the past when I've done this, if we had a break, we usually just kind of resumed the normal schedule from the new date.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, unless y'all want to hear 45 minutes on, you know, Assassin's Creed Origins, I'm not going to have anything new.
I gotcha.
So, but yeah, we'll figure it out. You know, whatever. Yeah. Watch your fucking iTunes feed. However you get the show on whatever mobile device or whatever the fuck you listen to on your way into work, just, you know, whatever. When you see the notification, listen to it. And we'll be here. But we appreciate you hanging out with us. And of course, you can always, you know, watch the streams or, you know, Friday night, 10 o'clock drunk watch. Last week was fucking epic. We fucking
hells yes.
Wrecked out. That was a return to form. Holy shit.
Yes. It was amazing.
It was nice to have like the core group and then, yes. You know, Andrew too, but it was nice to kind of have that crew back together and just fucking wreck and shop. So
yeah, that was so fun.
So that was a good time. And then, you know, we'll do PUBG again. So, you know, watch the Twitter feed. That way you can always know when we're streaming and you can catch up with us then. So for myself and Mitch, this has been episode 40, and we thank you for your time and hope that we will you'll be able to spend some time more time with us in the next week or couple weeks. So for myself and Mitch, thank you, good night, and have a good evening.